coming to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is such a wonderful opportunity, and I enjoy it so much. But one of the big challenges is finding housing. Tim Sniffen, you have managed to find, you're one of the performers of Baby Wants Candy, one of the creators of Thrones the Musical, big hits here at the Fringe, and you've managed to find the greatest housing here ever. How did you do that?
Well, my plan was to marry someone who had just been hired by the Edinburgh Airport. So my husband John and I had been living here for 2 years. So for many people, it's, you know, walking down from the place where they're paying £200 a night. I just walk from my house to do the show.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 515, Baby Wants Candy. Tim Sniffen is an improviser, actor, and playwright who I finally got to meet this summer in Edinburgh when I saw, again, the amazing Chicago-based improv group Baby Wants Candy, who improvise a brand new musical every single night based on a single audience suggestion. I've heard of Baby Wants Candy for years and never got to see it in Chicago. Had to come all the way to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival to see it for my first time 2 years ago in 2014. Now saw it again this year. Reed Martin, my partner, saw it twice this year. Wife and D. Ryan, who you know, brought our daughter. It's such a hit, and it's so popular here. How long have you been doing Baby Wants Candy?
I began doing Baby Wants Candy in 2000, and they came over here for, I believe, their second Fringe in 2001.
Okay.
And that's always such an exciting time. You hope you'll be asked. And I was one of the newer members of the group. And I just so happened to be laid off from my day job, in July. So the nice thing is they realized they needed one more person, just as I said, hey, for the record, I have nothing but free time on my hands. So that was the first time I came over, and it's the best experience in the world. They came on and off every now and then, until about, I think, 5 years ago, where they just dug their heels in and decided to come every year to really establish a presence. Because one of the hardest things here, you're competing with thousands of shows, so they started building an audience, and it's gotten a little easier and easier. And now, you know, it's nice that people will come before we, like, track them down on the street and shove a flyer in their mouth. So this is my fourth Fringe, I believe, and one of the most enjoyable.
Well, and Baby Wants Candy, it's a new show every night. It's an improvised musical. You take one suggestion, and you go. There's a cast of six, seven?
Here we have a cast of eight, so that way if someone doesn't feel well for one night, nothing is ruined. But at this point, we have groups in L.A., New York, and Chicago.
Oh, my God.
So spread through all of them, there's probably 25 of us.
Okay.
But in any given city, there's usually 10 or 12. And then for any night, in a single show, there'll be somewhere between 6 and 9.
Well, and when I was standing out here waiting for you to change and come out after the show, I heard some kids talk about, oh my God, and they've got legit voices. I didn't expect that. And you really do. You guys are killer improvisers and killer singers, and you've got a great band. Your secret weapon is your band, the Yes Band.
Yes. And that's grown over the years. We actually have a producer, Emily DeRizis, who she just wanted it to be a full, really polished experience. So that was one thing she brought when she began producing us was, let's do it up. Let's have a full band, really have a full sound. And I think it's really helped our show feel even a little more produced, since in essence, it's still improvised.
Well, it is still improvised. How would you describe either the structure of the show or the training necessary to be able to do the show? Because you guys make it look absurdly simple, and I know that it's not.
The structure is very, very basic, because I think if it became more complicated, it would be harder to follow. We do an opening number. Honestly, after that, we try to have two or three scenes with different characters in it, so we have somewhere to go.
Right.
So it's not just like, you know, one or two people. So we try to flesh out the world a little bit so that there's enough complexity so it will sustain for an hour. And we have a closing number that ideally will incorporate the opening chorus to make it sort of all fit together. But the thing is, when Baby Wants Candy first began, I think it was good improvising. improvisers who happen to sing.
Right.
We've maybe gotten a little better about our singing, and of course some people in the group really do have like the full-on training where you can tell when they sing.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Others of us are faking it as best as we can, and the ideally we all can blend together for a sound that is not upsetting.
Well, and what's lovely is, for instance, the night I was there, the musical that you performed, the opening night and closing night of the musical that you performed was, I think it was Princess Kate Loves Reggae.
Yes.
And what was great about it was that it wasn't all a reggae song. You guys didn't hit, you don't hit it on the nose. You find different angles, and it got into the ghost of the Queen, the ghost of Diana.
Yes.
You played Queen Elizabeth, and you sang this great number, You Don't Mess With the Queen.
Yes, yes. Someone came out and just said, you know, Your Majesty, so that's where you realize, okay, I see what you're doing.
And that's a gift when they do that for you.
It is. We like surprising each other. It keeps you on your toes, and that way, you know, like with all improv, whatever plan you have in your head goes out the window when someone calls you something else.
Would you say that it's based on the Herald, that kind of long-form structure?
It probably began with the Herald. Now it's a little looser. It's really just us chasing each other's ideas to the finish line. But it began with the Herald. I know that when it was founded, it was a group that really liked performing together, you know, including Al Samuels, who is still in the group, and many of the people still play occasionally. But I believe they were doing different forms every night, and finally one night they said, let's try a musical.
Right.
And that is, they loved doing it, the audience loved it, and so they stuck with that. But it began just as a group of improvisers, probably doing things similar to the Herald.
Sure. Well, I've seen a lot of improv. I tend to... I realize that I have tended to see more improv than anything else here at the Fringe this year. And I prefer the long form, and I've noticed that the Brits tend to do short form games. As a sweeping generalization, there's also Ostentatious, which is long form and wonderful. But I saw Showstoppers, the musical, which I really loved, and I would give it 5 stars, except I would take 2 stars away because they have a narrator who keeps pimping the cast. All right, now do it this style, or now do it this style. And for me, it just interrupts the flow of the thing. You guys are good actors. You get one suggestion, and you go. And I think that's a much greater accomplishment.
And that's simply where we came from. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still what we enjoy most of all. So, you know, there are different approaches to it. And, you know, there's room for everyone, I think.
Well, of course there is. Yes, you're being very nice. But would you describe it as an American versus a British thing? It doesn't seem like long form has come over here quite as much.
I think what little I know about UK improv is they are still figuring out what that means.
Yeah.
Because it's newer here. I know when we first came here, there were many, many people that would come up after the shows and say, but there really is a structure, right? This can't be... It was more of a magic trick. And now I think there are more magicians at the Fringe, you know, and so our hope is just to still do our tricks well. But it's caught on more here. There's more of it. But I think they're still finding out what British improv means, because there is still a bunch of short form, and there is long form but with some structure to it. And there are also people just doing, you know, throw yourself off the cliff Harolds with one suggestion.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is it's still in process, I think. They're figuring out, you know, what it is here.
Well, and it's the old conflict that I guess Del Close and Bernie Salins had, you know, about improv being a tool in Bernie's imagination, and Del saying, no, improv is the end. Improv is the thing itself.
And from what I've heard on Del's deathbed, I was in one of his classes. My class credited ourselves with being the class that killed him. He I think, had taught maybe one more, but we were doing our final, like, level 5A show when, the word is that Bernie Salins did visit him in the hospital and say, you're right, it's an art form by itself.
Yes.
I like to think, that's my hope, that that's what happened.
I've heard that story before as well, and I like to think that that's a true thing as well.
Yo, it's the Q Brothers.
And we on that. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Yeah.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our fall of 2016 tour of the election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged continues and concludes across 17 states this week and next, with performances in Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. Then we take 2 weeks off before heading off to China to perform the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged Revised for 3 weeks in Beijing, Shanghai, and Xiamen, while at the same time beginning a U.S. tour of The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in the U.S., with performances in Ohio, North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Maryland. How is that possible? It's a Christmas miracle. Then in February 2017, we begin a four-month UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. We'll have more information about all of our overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with improviser and playwright Tim Sniffen, who had not only a very busy Edinburgh Fringe, but as you'll hear, a very busy entire 2016. So in addition to Baby Wants Candy, you guys branched out this year of 2016 and created a new scripted musical called Thrones the Musical.
Yes, and just to make sure people are properly credited, I performed in it, but several members of the cast wrote it.
Okay.
And I kind of showed up and they handed me the script.
Oh, very good.
And I also had to begin watching Game of Thrones because I had never seen it until 2 weeks before this show. But now I know what all the jokes mean. But when I first read the script, I was like, okay, Tyrion Lannister, who is that?
Oh my God. So is that that's what I love about coming to Britain when we have to change a punchline, they say, oh, say this.
Yes.
PPI? What the hell's PPI? I never understood what that joke was, but it got a huge laugh every time.
I still don't know what it means, and I live here, so shame on me.
It has something to do with phones. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Phones. Not thrones, but phones.
No, I see ads on my web browser that's like, find out if you have PPI. And in my mind, I thought it was like maybe some sort of like urinary tract infection. But I was like, I don't want to know if I have PPI, so I'm never going to click on this ad.
I thought it was the device that actually examines your pee-pee.
Yes.
But you've got a fantastic response to Thrones, because it was hard getting tickets to both of these shows.
And I know Baby Wants Candy, as a group, wanted to branch out and do more than just the improvised musical, because, we love doing that, and we still do that. But they did a few years ago, they did 50 Shades, which was a send-up of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
That did very well, so they were looking for another thing that could, would not burn out like over the course of the festival and still be topical. And they hit upon Thrones, and I think it was a nice match. They just started writing, and I know they did it last year, and the beautiful thing is the show keeps coming out, so they updated it for this year, and crowds seem to love it, and we've loved performing it.
Well, and if you have watched Game of Thrones, which you haven't...
I'm on season two.
Okay, season two.
Although the show has ruined most of the surprises for me.
I was going to say, there's a moment, the thing that happens to Hodor in season six.
Yes, I finally just went and watched the YouTube video of that moment because I was like, well, I kind of know already. Right. And the nice thing is, I really do love the show now that I'm watching it. And I think it's so well made, it's so fun, there's so much drama to it that knowing the secret that might be coming in two seasons doesn't kill watching each episode.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And what was lovely about Thrones, the musical, was that it's so funny, so funny, so funny, and for this tragic moment that happens in season six to a much beloved character, you guys sing a totally straight song, sincere, beautiful, harmony, a cappella, and everybody in the crowd is weeping.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was Chris Grace, who's also in the show and is one of the writers, and also plays Hodor. He pushed for that moment, and he said, I think we've earned it at that point. We've had plenty of jokes. People at that point aren't thinking, is this show funny or not? Hopefully they're on board. So that earns us a little bit of a heartfelt moment for a heartfelt moment from the actual show. It's interesting hearing the audience. There will be some laughs as the show begins, as they're like, is this another joke? And then you can hear people realize, oh no, this is just going to be sweet.
Yeah.
So I love that moment because I feel like it takes it at least maybe one notch away from just a bag of jokes to like a sweet moment. And every now and then we get some criers in the audience, and that's like a little victory for us.
It is. Chris feels a little bit bit like another secret weapon for you guys. He reminds me of Ian Gomez a little bit.
Yes, he is. He's great. I find him unshakable on stage, improvising and otherwise, and he will come up with things that no one else in the group could have thought of and just take the show, like, kind of put it into overdrive.
Well, and he feels like the audience surrogate in many ways. I mean, if the audience looks at him and goes, okay, he's the guy that I can follow.
Yes, yeah.
And he's so funny.
And he I'm sure, would love that description. Because okay. I think there are times where we might be getting a little too loony in our show, and Chris will kind of, like, just do the perfect adjustment to bring everyone on board. He's really fun to perform with.
Yeah. So then in addition to Thrones, the parody musical that you did not write, you did have a big 2016 in that you wrote a parody that performed at the Writers Theater in Chicago, 100 yards from my house.
I'm so happy you found the time to walk 2 minutes to see the show that I worked for 3 years on.
I was particularly happy that they gave me tickets.
We tried to have it mounted in your living room, but we heard there was some laundry on the table or something, so we had to do it at Writers Theater.
Whatever. It was called Death of a Streetcar Named Virginia Woolf, colon, a parody.
Correct. That was one that I wrote in conjunction with Second City.
Okay.
And it was a producer there, Kelly Leonard, who just had the idea for the title. I was walking past his office. He had written it down. And he was like, "What do you think of this? What would that be?" And I was like, "I can picture what would happen in a show called that."
Yeah.
And so he said, "Great, take a crack at the script."
Oh.
Which I did with another Second City writer and performer, Tim Ryder. And then it went on. I ended up finishing the show, and Writers Theater came to one of the stage readings, and they said, "Yeah, we'll do it."
Well, it was a fantastic production. I can't imagine a better cast than you had. Did you get to see it? You were in town.
Oh yeah. Okay. I was there for rehearsals.
Yeah. Right.
And honestly, when that cast, because they finally, writers then arranged a reading with the people that they said, "We would love to produce it. We would love to bring our excellent cast to it." Hearing them read that script felt like, okay, Christmas is saved.
Yeah.
Because they just were so good.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is going to be so much fun to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was. And apparently it was a big hit. One question I had, did they make you attach the subtitle, a parody?
Absolutely. Well, that actually came from, if I'm not mistaken, Edward Albee's legal team, or at least someone on it. They said, you know, they just wanted to do their due diligence.
Yeah.
They sent the script around and they said, "Okay, are you going to hammer us?" And they said, "Just add a parody to the title. It will make it much more comfortable for us." Because I think one of the big problems in parody that gets you sued is when they can make a case that people are mistaking your work for theirs and giving you their ticket money instead of the estate.
Yeah.
So they said, when you put parody on it, we know that no one's going to be confused and come see your show instead of the real Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Right.
So we were like, "Great, fine. We don't want you to sue us."
That was, you know, in an earlier podcast, I went, "Oh, I hate that." And I said, "I bet that was forced on Tim." And I was right.
Absolutely. And at the end of one rehearsal, there was a point, we were getting close to opening, and they said to the cast, "We're just opening it up. Is there anything about this show that is kind of sticking in your craw that you just don't, you know, any lines of dialogue?" And one of them said, "Do we have to have a parody on the end of it? It just seems like it makes it something else." And the director was like, "We absolutely do.
Yes.
I hear your concern.
Yes.
It is not going away."
Yeah. No, I get it. You have to be safe. And will there be future productions of that? Because I can totally envision many theaters performing that show.
I absolutely hope so. I know people have approached, other theaters have approached Writers Theater, they've approached Second City, so it's just a matter of hammering out deals. I would love to see it go somewhere else. And, you know, the nice thing is it's all based on classic American plays. It's not going to be irrelevant in 2 months.
No, yeah, that's like anything else ephemeral in the pop culture.
Yeah. You know, this is, the idea was all these different classic plays that we all know in some form slamming into each other in one show. So God willing, it goes and has a bunch of other shows.
So do you get a lot of work as both a actor and a writer, or is it more one, more the other?
Right now, especially Second City, because I'm over here in Scotland, it's writing.
Okay.
I do a little bit of performing. When I lived in Chicago, I did as much as I could.
Yeah.
So right now, it's great. They give me kind of projects to work on. I have one that I'm working on right now based on Richard Wagner writing The Ring Cycle.
That's
which
good.
Is just a laugh riot.
Yeah, oh, sure it is.
But Lyric Opera in Chicago is beginning their Ring Cycle this fall, so they wanted a companion piece to go along with it. So Second City again was like, "Start researching this and see what you got," and we've done some readings of that, and it will play this October.
which is phenomenal. And I we talked about this when last time I saw you. It might be the time for me to finally digitize and put The Ring Reduced up on the YouTube, because we shrunk Wagner's Ring Cycle down to a 22-minute film for Channel 4.
You gotta yeah. put it out there. People yeah. need it. We need more Wagner parody.
We need more Wagner reduction.
Well, I mean, we do, because it's like, you know, it was one thing with like The Streetcar Show, where it's all these shows that it's like not everyone has the time to go and watch, you know, Death of a Salesman.
Yeah.
I mean, if people are scared of that, like The Ring Cycle, finally, yeah. listening to it and reading it, it is like a 3 or 4 day commitment. Yeah. Just to listen to the damn thing. Yeah. So yeah, you need to like to find ways for people to be able to access it.
So, and as we speak, it's the second to last night of the Edinburgh Fringe of 2016. Can you not wait for everybody to leave town so you can have your city back to yourself? Or are you going to be sad to see everybody go?
Both. Yeah. I'll be sad to see people go, although it's been such a fun month.
Yeah.
But just for things like buying groceries, I mean, my God, like you have someone like dressed like the Spectre of Death with a clown nose trying to force like a ukulele into your hand. I'm ready for that to be over so we can just like go and buy breakfast.
And don't you live near the Royal Mall, right?
Oh yeah, we live right off of it. It's a street called Coburn that goes right down to the train station and has the baked potato shop on it. So we're right there. We can hear that Spanish guitarist playing his cover of Kiss from a Rose for the 8 millionth time every day. Today we were eating dinner and it was someone playing the like most depressing hit, just like playlist over and over. We were like, someone go give this man a razor blade so we can eat our dinner in peace.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Tim Sniffen's next project, Longer, Louder, Wagner, the Second City Wagner Companion, plays this weekend at the Lyric Opera in Chicago for 6 performances only. Go to lyricopera.org for tickets and information. And if you're not in Chicago this weekend or can't get tickets, our 22-minute film, The Ring Reduced, which we wrote and shot for Britain's Channel 4 in 1994, is now up on YouTube. Click over there for all of your Reduced Ring Cycle needs. Then send us your favorite Rhine Maiden via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, gentleman caller Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Michael Bronton. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to the Q Brothers, creators of The Bombity of Errors and Othello the Remix, which opens off-Broadway this week at the West Side Theater on 43rd Street. I'll speak to G and JQ next week on the podcast. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 515, 1545ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. D described the Edinburgh Fringe as the Disneyland of theater.
Absolutely, and it's just coming at you from every angle. If anything could be imagined and produced, it is here, which is cool. It's all here. You can see anything you want. So I am so happy that this exists.
Yeah.
But, you know, you remember that some theater never needs to happen, but it does anyway.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.